several or a month or so ago, Penny didn't have surgery. She had a cortisone shot. She had to stay off her legs for a couple days, but she's anticipating surgery, I think. So that was that right.
Both knees,
yeah.
She's got trouble with her knees.
She's been up and down, like I said, for quite a while, in and out. About a month ago, I gave a lesson on the inspiration of the Bible. I didn't intend to have a kind of like a miniature series on Sunday night. But as a follow-up to that lesson, I gave a lesson on the attacks against God and His Word. And a lesson, and following that, gave a lesson on the prophecies that are fulfilled concerning Christ and the church. And so tonight, again, just a lesson still on why we believe the Bible, or evidences for the Bible in scientific foreknowledge. Next Sunday night, Lord willing, I've got working on a lesson titled, Why I Want to Believe the Bible. Why I Want to. So it's not the evidences, like these lessons are on the testimonies or witnesses. It just says, I just want to give a lesson on what. Someone ever asked you, why do you believe the Bible? Well, I'm going to give you a couple of reasons for that next Lord's Day evening, Lord willing. I have several books on this subject, not just these two, but more. But every book I have has a chapter kind of like on this particular topic, so the Bible and scientific foreknowledge. So I'll look at that. There was a handout was given back in 1977 by Philip Lester. Philip Lester was the preacher at that time in Poway. There was a congregation in Poway back in the 70s. And so he even put one of his pages, almost like my year outline that I've given you, the accuracy in the scientific realm on the Bible. So I've kind of borrowed from several people to give these notes or this outline. But just by way of introduction, I put the purpose of the Bible is not to be a textbook on material science, but I put within its pages, they're scientific fundamental truths. And what makes that significant or outstanding or valuable is because these scientific truths are one of the many things that establish the inspiration of the Bible. You know, modern science has never disproved any of these statements in the Bible. But rather, modern science has proved the truthfulness of what the Bible has revealed concerning material science. And so these biblical statements were written years before modern science made their revelation, or look what we discovered or found out. And so here are some examples that I have listed for you for tonight. Number one are just scientific principles. A man named Herbert Spencer, he was born in 1820. So what, 200 years ago? I guess that, my math right? Close. 200 years ago, he made this announcement that there's only five manifestations of the unknowable. In other words, in existence. So if you want to find out something, it boils down to these five areas: time, force, action, space, and matter. But yet these things were revealed by Moses in the first verse of the Bible, Genesis 1, verse 1. You have in the beginning, that's time. God, that's force. Created, that's action. The heavens, space. And the earth, and that's matter. So Moses put all these scientific fundamentals in the first book of Genesis, or the first verse. And it's interesting, they're all in the same order as announced by Herbert Spencer. Coincidence. Herbert Spencer said, these are the five things, and Mr. Spencer, you got them in the same order, or have them in the same order that's revealed in Genesis 1, verse 1. So we say, how did God know that? in the beginning. Number two, the rotundity of the earth. So historically, remember when people thought the earth was flat? And even today, I said in my notes, I think there's a flat earth society that still exists. And I Googled it, and yes, there is. there's still a present flat earth society. But we're back in history, you know, in the age of exploration, the sailors ventured out into the ocean and eventually found, and eventually went around the world proving that it's spherical in shape and not flat earth. But I can imagine back then, just if you thought the earth was flat and going out and you lose sight of land, you wonder, how soon are we going to drop off the edge? Proverbs 8, verse 27. When God drew a circle on the face of the deep. A circle. In Isaiah 21, verse 22, the question is asked, have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is He, meaning God, who sits above the circle of the earth. Rotundity of the earth. There, it's in the Bible. And yet we think we still have a flat earth society. So the Bible reveals things that people discovered years and years later. But it's evidence, it's testimony, it's witness to the truthfulness of the Bible. Number three, I just put the suspension of the earth. Now remember in Greek and Roman mythology, there was a time when they believed the earth was held in place by poles, or the earth was held in place by resting on top of the neck of Atlas, or that Atlas had the earth on his shoulders in some way. And others thought that the earth floated on water. There were these in mythology. And they kept thinking, if we go out too far in the sea again, we're going to perish. But again, with the exploration, explorers saw the earth sits on nothing. It touches nothing. Nothing holds it in place. I mean like a string or anything like that. And in Job 26, verse 7, He stretches out the north over the empty space, hangs the earth on nothing. Wow. There's nothing beneath the earth holding it up or supporting it in its place. I always wonder, God, what were you standing on when you created the earth or creation? You have to stand on something. Your workbench when you made this creation? No, He hangs the earth on nothing. There's nothing above the earth, nothing below it. And then astronomers, as you know, they've discovered that great empty space in the north. But you turn your telescopes in the other directions and you see the stars and other things, Milky Way, things like that. So Job declares a truth long before there was ever a discovery of the truthfulness that's stated in the book of Job. Number four, I just put the rotation, revolution, and dimensions of the earth. In Job 38, God brings Job front and center. God says to Job, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretches a line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? In Isaiah 40, verse 12, who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? He's measured heaven with a span, calculated the dust of the earth in a measure, weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. You know, hear the words in those verses? Foundations, measurements, stretched a line, foundations fastened, measured again, calculated, weighed, balanced. Interesting words in the verses. So God has perfectly created a balanced proportion of the elements of the earth upon which we depend our existence. Today's science tells us if the earth weighed more, its attraction to the sun would be too great. The earth would be drawn inside its orbit and it would burn up. They said if the earth weighed less, it would lose its attraction with the sun. It would go outside the orbit and be hurled into space and freeze. If the size of the earth were a bit larger, there would be no oxygen. If the size of the earth were smaller, it would affect oxygen levels so that it would not be breathable. So God measures the earth. Rotation, revolution, axis, size, weight. All made by God, creation. And science discovers it years and years later. Again, the Bible proves to be true, just in science. Number five, the scientific proportions of the ark. In March 1919, the government of the United States launched its first concrete ship. It was in San Francisco. The dimensions were 300 by 50 by 30 feet. Do those dimensions sound familiar? Same proportions as the ark that Noah built by God's instructions, except Noah's were in cubits. And there was modern shipbuilding still holds to the same proportions. Interesting. And by the way, one of my notes had the ark was built of gopher wood, Genesis 6, verse 14. If Noah had used any other sort of wood, the material would have perished before he finished the ark. 120 years in building. And then number six, the paths of the sea. And I just rewrote, it's in George D. Hoff's book, Why We Believe the Bible, on page 53. I just rewrote the two paragraphs. The Matthew Fontaine Murray, the pathfinder of the seas and the founder of the science of oceanography, was a firm believer in and a close student of the Bible. His teaching caused the Annapolis Academy to be founded, and his memory is honored and respected throughout the world. On Monument Row in Richmond, Virginia, is a statue of the great scientist sitting with the Bible in one hand and his charts of the sea in the other. Behind him is a globe of the earth which he helped to explore. Before Matthew Fontaine Murray lived, there were no sailing lanes and no charts of the sea. One day when he was ill, his son read to him from the 8th Psalm. He read that God put under man, in the quote in the verse, the fowls of the air, the fish of the sea, and whosoever passes through the paths of the sea. And Matthew Murray said, read that again. Upon hearing it the second time, the venerable scientist said, if the word of God said there are paths in the sea, they must be there. I will find them. And within a few years, he charted the principal lanes or the paths of the sea. And these are followed by ocean-going vessels to this day. So he last one, how did David know of these paths in the sea? Matthew Fontaine Murray. The paths of the sea. Number seven, the number of stars. Back in the early centuries, they believed there were just a very few stars in the heavens. You know, you just look up and I can count those maybe. In 150 BC, Hipparchus said there were less than 1,000. In AD 150, Ptolemy said there were not any more than 3,000. But then after the Middle Ages, the discovery of the telescope, and they said, oh, the stars are innumerable. But Genesis, chapter 15, verse 5, then he brought him, meaning Abraham, outside and said, Look toward the heaven. Count the stars if you are able to number them. And he said, God said to him, so shall your descendants be. The truth about the number of the stars were in the Bible the whole time. Number 8, the water cycle, water vapor cycle. Job 36, verse 27. He draws up drops of water, which distill as rain from the mist, which the clouds drop down and pour abundantly on man. Elementary science. Written in the pages of the Bible. You know, I guess, what, this second or third grade science? Yeah, but it's in the Bible. Number 9, the last one. God questions Job. So in Job 38, the opening verses, so the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. He said, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Well, that's a phrase we could use in many situations today concerning God and existence and things like that. Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man, God said to Job. I'll question you, and you shall answer me. And so there's several dozen questions in this chapter that God asked Job. I just mentioned 4 of them in my notes. Verse 8, who shut in the sea with doors? The sea can only go so far. Who shut the sea with doors? Verse 16, have you entered the springs of the sea? I wonder when that discovery was made. But it was even back in the flood. Remember, not only did it rain 40 days and 40 nights, but there was water bubbled up from the bottom. Water came from both ways. It's in the Bible already. Job, the springs of the sea. Verse 19, where is the way to the dwelling of light? Yeah, light moves. Speed of light? Well, I should have written that one down. How many? The distance. They measure light, you know, some of the stars by light years. I can't imagine that. And they say some stars are shining where the light is just now getting here. my mind cannot comprehend that. That distance. Oh, is it 181 or 86?
Per second.
Yeah. Speed of light. And they call it light years. That speed over a year's time, they measure that. And you think, light from some of those stars are just getting here. The dwelling of light. Verse 22, have you entered the treasury of snow? The treasury of snow. Dr. Frank Schutt, Canadian Department of Agriculture, has shown that as the snow falls, it collects nitrates and ammonia from the air. These are valuable fertilizers. The average winter snow and hail is worth $15 per acre to farmland. The value, the treasure of snow. Yeah. So the science, in closing, the Bible and science agree. And though the Bible gives us scientific information, it speaks to man's soul. I mean, the information is nice to have, but take the application to heart. You know, the Bible tells us that the soul has an eternal destiny beyond this mortal life. And these are not the only ones. Like I say, there's the books I have, there's a chapter on this. You know, half a dozen pages or more just on these scientific discoveries that the Bible has proved all along. So Lord willing, next week, I'll give you a lesson, Lord willing, I say, why I want to believe the Bible. You know, I think if I remember a couple of my notes, just jotted down, because it tells me that I'm going to live after I die. I want to believe that. People die too soon. You know, we see the news and things like that. Babies die. You didn't live very long on this earth. I want to believe that we live after we die. I think second I put, because I want to go to a better home. You know, that house we live in, it requires a lot. There's maintenance all the time. I've heard the phrase, you know, a job done once doesn't need to be done again, but I've mowed that grass a lot of times. One time I thought I did a really good job, but I have to do it again. Yeah. Wow. I want to believe the Bible because of the witness of others. You know, my parents taught me that it was true. And I'm not going to forsake that without good reason. And I've haven't discovered anything to take that teaching or that faith away from me. I think I have two more reasons I jotted down. But why do you want to believe the Bible? Well, we have the evidences. Why do you want to? Yeah. So I do. All right, to close of each lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, song of invitation. It's very long tonight, didn't I? We sing a song of exhortation, song of encouragement. We do this to give you time to reflect on your relationship with God. If you haven't obeyed the gospel message already, this is a time provided. While we're gathered here. And what better time than you have folks to rejoice with your decision to become a Christian, to be baptized for remission of sins, or to ask for help or strength or encouragement. This is the time for that. So we sing this song. So let's stand together and we'll sing this song that Dennis has selected for us. And if that's your desire, if that's your resolve to obey the gospel message, to be baptized for remission of sins, we can accomplish that. Or you just simply want to share something with brethren and say, pray for me. We can do that also. So let's sing.
Heart.